Keeping up with the crazy, midterms, military, and more trans terrorism on today's episode. You're listening to The Last Gay Conservative. I'm your host, Chad Law. Oh, yeah. Let's go, Brandon. Oh, yeah. Come on. We are fired up today. Let's go. Hello, everybody. And let's go, Brandon. And welcome to another episode of The Last Gay Conservative. It's me, Chad Law, your host, the binary brother of your dreams, the holiest homo, the most fascist fairy, working every day to destroy the soul of America, sending facts, findings, and most importantly, our truth on the red, white, and blue rainbow. Well, folks, hope you're all well. It is a beautiful day today in Newport Beach, California, as we approach sweater weather. Very excited to pull down some of my winter fall wardrobe items. We have a very small window in Southern California to wear those things. And I don't know why, I just feel that the fall, sweaters and jackets and things like that are just so much more fun than some of the spring summer clothing that we get, because it's just so boring here in California with the weather. I'm not complaining. Love the weather. Don't get me wrong. But from a fashion sense, it's difficult to get into some of the pieces that are geared more towards cold weather. Got a big show for you today. We are going to take it a little bit more organically today and go over some of the top stories that I picked out for you, as well as running down some of the new midterm information. I thought I would share that with you as we're about 2 weeks out from the midterms. And most importantly, some interesting trans stories that I thought I would bring to your attention. We will go through the stories. However, I am not going to monologue today, but I will always, as always, offer my opinion that is always right on each one of these stories. So hang tight. In the meantime, before we get into the meat of the episode, I do want to share a story with you at the risk of losing all credibility. Recently, I received a gift or an extra item that retails for around $5,000. I'm not going to say what it is, but it retails for about $5,000. Threw it up on OfferUp for $1,000, trying to sell it. And you know, generally, I either take that money and donate it or give the item away. I don't do this to make money, and I never do. So I put it up on OfferUp, and I get a message from a gentleman who says, "Hey, I really like this. I have cash. Unfortunately, my car's in the shop. I live in Long Beach. Would you mind doing a delivery if I give you an extra $100? Well, funny enough, normally I'd say absolutely not. I don't have time. But funny enough, two things were sort of on my mind. First, I wanted to take out a car that I haven't driven in a while and let it rip up the coast. And then two, the best restaurant for pies is in Long Beach called Hoff's Hut. And I was craving their coconut cream pie. And hysterically enough, the day before I drove up, I was just telling my friend about their coconut cream pie. So I thought, oh, great, I'll get a couple. I'll go up to Long Beach and then I'll do the deal, the offer up deal, et cetera. And I've gotten pretty good at offer up. I check to make sure people have other reviews, they've sold other things, et cetera, because there are some scammers there. So I go to meet the guy, and him and what looks like his son are standing on the corner outside their house. And I turn the car around, and neighborhood's not great, but it's not terrible. And of course, they're, you know, going on and on about my car and about Ron, the dog, and they seemed friendly enough. The kid looked like he was half black and the dad looked just Hispanic. And I said, okay, here's the item. And they're looking at it and they're going, okay, that's really good. And he pretends to get the cash out of his pocket. And then they both just run as fast as they can and steal the item. Well, of course, we're in Los Angeles County. Nothing's going to happen. So I start chasing them. I had a feeling that something was weird. So I actually cocked my firearm in my man bag in order to be ready if something were to happen, which I never do. I never generally carry with it chambered unless there's an awkward situation only because in California it's just so strict, and you can literally go to jail for walking around with a chambered handgun. So I have the gun chambered, ready to go in my bag. The item is in my bag. I pull it out. Like I said, they're looking at it and then they run. So I chase them. I pull my gun and they are completely shocked when I fire two warning shots up into the air, and they kept running as fast as they can. Son trips and he's crying on the floor. I said, you know, I put my gun away right away. I said, I'm not here to shoot you. I just wanted to scare you. Where is your dad? And he's like, oh, that's not my dad. That's just this guy, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, where's the money or the item? You have a choice, money or item or cops. And he's like, I don't know where he went and blah, blah, blah. Long story short, the item got stolen. No money was given. And the only reason why I pulled out my gun and fired two shots in the air was because I'm so sick and tired of these blatant criminals being able to take advantage of people without any sort of consequence. And funny enough, if the cops were called, I would have been the criminal for firing my weapon. And I didn't fire towards anyone, but I wanted them to know that although I might not be desperate for those funds, if they steal from someone else who's desperate for the funds and happens to be carrying, they could both get killed. And I knew this wasn't their first time based on the OfferUp profile that they've created. Long story short, these people, like just like this, all over California, are continuing to get away with crimes like this because all the police departments, whether it's LA County Sheriff, Long Beach Police, LAPD, they're just so lazy and they don't care anymore. And it's sad because I love law enforcement. I mean, the Orange County Sheriff, I'm a huge fan and supporter, donor. Same with Newport Beach Police. But in LA County, it's a joke. It's a complete joke. And they'd rather be woke than out fighting crime. I didn't even call the police because I knew that nothing would happen to these guys. And, you know, I stuck around for a while to see if the guy would peep his head out. And of course he didn't, but it was also very hard for me in my car, to not get noticed. So I took off, and it's embarrassing because one, I think or thought that I was smart enough to not get scammed, but two, it's also embarrassing because I am someone who is so anti-crime and I fell victim to it. And the only reason why I'm sharing the story, you know, embarrassing myself basically, is because it just shows that it can happen to anyone. It can happen to anyone. The nicest people who are the most verified still steal and cheat because they can, because they can, because they know there is no consequence for their behavior. And I'm tired of it. And what's going to happen is if this continues, you're going to have a lot of vigilantes, way more vigilantes than me firing a warning shot. And things are going to start getting really scary. And I don't blame them, especially these people that live in these neighborhoods and they're subject to all of this. And they're not criminals and they don't want criminals in their neighborhood. But unfortunately, that's where they live. Makes me sick. So bottom line, people, you should be carrying. You should be careful. And most importantly, you should not let your guard down for personal reasons like I did. The first mistake I made was think, oh, yeah, I could go up there and I'll take my car and I'll go get pie. And I thought more about that than really thinking about the situation. On the flip side of that, I've done so much offer up and I have delivered and I've had things delivered to me and I've met in the middle. I've met in the lobby of my building or my house. So it's not uncommon for a delivery, but it is uncommon in the way that everything went down, and it's completely my fault. And as I mentioned, it's embarrassing, but on the flip side of it, let it be a lesson to all of us that there's just blatant criminals all over Los Angeles because of George Gascon and the free, no consequence crime county that he's established. And I have fallen victim to it. So, all right, enough about me and my story. Let's talk about some of the happenings. I don't know if you guys are aware that Taylor Swift, I think everyone in the world is aware, but I don't know if you are aware that Taylor Swift is dropping or just dropped her new Midnights album that's breaking records all over the world. On Friday, after she dropped her album, I don't know if you all saw, and the only reason why I saw is because I was in Target, and there was a huge group of girls like swarming the TVs in the electronics department in the back of the store. And I'm looking and going, what the heck is going on? And I look over and I realize it's Taylor Swift with a teaser, sort of sizzle reel, if you will, and then her talking to Target customers as if she was talking to actual Target customers. Obviously, it was a video made exclusively for Target that was launching the album. That being said, it made me want to check it out. And so I came home and I'm looking and I see this teaser that got dropped. And it features scenes from all sorts of upcoming music videos. So she can say that, you know, this is coming, that's coming, and get people excited about the music videos. And so in this video, there's a very attractive man that is sort of the love interest of Taylor Swift in the video. Looks almost like Drake. Very attractive. And come to find out, the LGBTQ community is all giggles and smiles because that attractive man is actually a trans model and actor, and his name is Laith Ashley. And like I said, he plays the love interest of Taylor Swift during the movie. Essentially, he's a hot, steamy dancer, and him and Taylor Swift are in bed together, and he's got his shirtless back and body that looks great. And why do I bring this up? I bring this up because this is another example of how liberals and the woke mob have such a double standard. These are the people that forced CVS to stop retouching pictures because it objectified women. These are the people who protest the Victoria's Secret fashion show. These are the people that believe that you should own and be proud of your body, regardless of how sickly and unhealthy you are, body positive. So they force and want Hollywood to be more inclusive of the trans community, of trans people. Hollywood doesn't want trans people in their music videos. Taylor Swift, I can guarantee you, she wasn't looking for a trans person for her videos. She's trying to cave to the mob. So what they do when they cave to the mob is instead of getting a real typical trans person, they get these people like Laith Ashley, Laverne Cox, and they objectify them and dangle them as examples of what people transitioning can become. And it's just absolute crap. I mean, if you look at this guy, he's had at least $100,000 worth of plastic surgery. He's got pec implants, not sure about his arms. He's got full facial hair. I mean, he looks completely 100% like a biological male. You would never, ever know that he's trans. And so when we look at this and teenage girls look at this man, this trans man, they think this is what they're going to end up looking like. When in actuality, they'll never look like that. This is the exception, not the rule. In actuality, they're going to look more like Caitlyn Jenner or Felicity Huffman in Trans America, Jeffrey Tambor in Transparent. That's what real trans people look like. They're obviously trans. So they're parading this guy around as an example who's exalted by the LGBTQ community. Exalted. And Taylor Swift is so incredible for putting a trans model in her video, when in actuality, this is no representation of a trans person. This isn't real. This isn't what trans life is. It's not getting on music videos. And it's the same thing with Laverne Cox and young guys. Now, Laverne is a little bit more obviously trans looking, especially with her height, but she's still beautiful. In photos and all the retouching and airbrushing, and she has her own Barbie. Again, glorifying transitioning, glorifying gender dysphoria, and making it out to be that trans people can achieve this look. And they can't. They absolutely cannot. Less than 1% will ever be able to look like these people. Whereas with cis or straight people, we're not allowed to have Victoria's Secret or any aspirational content. we're not allowed to do anything that would make women feel bad about themselves. I mean, we can't even advertise on Facebook of before and after pictures in the beauty business of women because it objectifies women and it could make someone feel bad about who they are in relativity to the picture. Yet you've got this lathe Ashley with his shirt off, full body hair, huge biceps, huge pecs. He's got a chin implant, nose job, and all sorts of other things. And they're parading him around like he is this prime example of trans life. And it could not be more false. And when we're thinking about how the liberal mob and how Hollywood wants to insert people into mainstream culture, of course, they're going to take the best looking. They're going to take the ones that probably have the easiest life. And they're going to set the stage in the same way that Victoria's Secret sets the stage for straight girls to look super sexy. What's the difference? You tell me, what is the difference? The difference is this: young girls, a much higher percentage of them, can turn out looking like a Victoria's Secret model, you know, with the right amount of exercise and plastic surgery or not is irrelevant, but the chances are much higher for someone, my little sister, for example, to be looking like Heidi Klum versus a little girl that wants to be a man looking like Laith Ashley. It's damn near impossible. And the case with Laverne and Laith Ashley is they both already looked very much of what they were transitioning to. So for example, Laith Ashley looked very manly as a woman and Laverne Cox looked very womanly as a man. So they already had that starting point. But it's completely unattainable. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to get there. And it is not a true representation of the trans community. And so that's what they do. They objectify these people, these models, these actors, and they say, look, this is the representation of the trans community. And they shun people like Caitlyn Jenner because she doesn't look like these people. She doesn't look like Laverne Cox. She looks her age and she looks like she transitioned. She looks like a man that's now a woman, which there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want. But don't put that person against this new standard that you're setting against Laith Ashley or Laverne Cox. It's absolutely not okay. And it's all it is a subliminal form of grooming. That's all it is. And whether or not Taylor Swift knows how poorly this decision to put this Laith Ashley in the video will hurt not only the LGBTQ community, but her career. Whether or not she knows is irrelevant to the point of this is her submitting to the pressure of the woke mob that major stars need to start becoming inclusive of the trans community and showcasing trans people. But this isn't a trans person. I mean, it is, but it's not. It's not a representation of trans. It's incredible. The Advocate has this whole story. And one of the quotes that I love is, it's incredible to see Laith Ashley as part of the Midnight's music videos and appearing to be a character of Taylor's desire, no less, says Alex Schmider, director of trans representation at GLAAD on Twitter. Okay, so essentially, wow, this is, again, supposedly trans representation. And they're using it as a way to push trans life and gender dysphoria. And they're using it in order to make people believe this is what they can look like. This is what they can become. And if you look at him, you look at him on Advocate or just Google him, Laith_Ashley, there's absolutely no way that anyone, maybe one out of a million people transitioning, will look like him. The same thing applies to Laverne Cox. I can't stand this stuff. This is the stuff that drives me crazy. And the same thing happened in the gay community. When the gay community was first being represented on TV, they were all these typical West Hollywood types with paper white teeth and six-pack abs and tans. And, you know, they all looked like walking Ken dolls. And it was not a representation of the gay community. And it create a false hope amongst younger gay guys, but it also created a false perception amongst the masses that gay guys are so obviously gay when they look like this. And they weren't. They absolutely weren't. And it wasn't until people like Cam on Modern Family showcased a whole new body and attitude within the gay community that I don't think the general public truly understood. And so now they're doing the same thing with trans, and they're putting out this perfect idea of what trans should look like, what trans should be, the woke utopia. And it's creating a really, really dangerous situation when people think that they can turn around and look just like some of these people. And I've seen the comments on Instagram. I've seen the tweets, and there's so many that say, wow, I can't believe he's trans. I've never seen a trans person looking like this before. This gives me hope for trans people or transitioning. And it just is not okay. I'm very disappointed in Taylor Swift or her management, but I also understand why, because the woke mob has massive amounts of control over Hollywood. For whatever reason that is, they just seem to work together. Taylor Swift, very, very talented. Love her music. Liked her better when she was country. But this is a perfect example of someone caving to the mob and putting out a representation that's not only false, but it represents a very, very, very dangerous normalization of gender dysphoria or transitioning. More on that, more on trans. I noticed that Rachel Levine just was elected to the National Academy of Medicine. I don't know if you all know, Rachel Levine is the Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services here in the United States. She is appointed by Biden, and she was appointed by Biden because she is trans, she's a trans woman. She is also a 4-star admiral in the United States Public Health Service Commissioned Corps, which is a fancy word for public health. But there's about 100 people that were newly elected into this, the National Academy of Medicine, and she's one of them. And the reason why I'm talking about this story is because, again, this is a perfect example of representations within the trans community. So what you're seeing happen here, folks, is a representation of each sort of group, if you will, in school. So the first thing you have is you have athletes and athletics, and they want to create that sort of all-knowing, all-inclusive sports community, which will get the attention of athletes, young athletes. Then you have the influencer, popular girl, boy sort of type. These are all just like the high school cliques, right? And so the next big one is the Brainiacs. That's where I would have been. That's where I would have seen. You know, I wasn't not popular, but I was more into things that are a little bit more intellectual. So when they put up people like Levine, who is a better example of what they're going to look like, but when they put up people like Levine in these big positions who absolutely don't deserve it, and then they induct her and elect her into these massively prestigious groups. Why? Because she's transgender. How am I going to prove that to you? Well, you listen. It says, National Academy of Medicine is considered one of the highest honors in the fields of health and medicine and recognizes individuals who have demonstrated outstanding professional achievement and commitment to service. For her expertise in pediatrics and adolescent medicine, and being the first openly transgender official to be ever confirmed by the U.S. Senate. Huh? Essentially, their opening sentence about why they elected her is because she's the first openly transgender official to be confirmed by the Senate. Really? We're confirming people or electing people to very prestigious organizations because they're transgender. I understand that it says for her expertise in pediatric and adolescent medicine, but it's superseded by the next part of the sentence that says that's why she was elected. That's why she was nominated. It goes on to say she is a voice for federal-state cooperation, issues of health equity, and has been an outstanding leader in emergency response to addiction and overdose. What is her emergency response to addiction and overdose? First of all, fentanyl and overdoses are way higher than they've ever been under her leadership. Second, her big response, clean crack pipe kits, safe using sites for heroin addicts, no drug test housing. All of these things that she's done have taken us years back in the progress that we've made in combating, especially the opioid-opiate crisis. There's more fentanyl in this country than ever, and all she cares about is making drug use acceptable and normalizing it so it doesn't put pressure additionally on drug addicts, making them want to use more. Instead of forcing them into rock bottom and helping them rebuild their life, she just wants to keep feeding them drugs and make it easier to do drugs. Now, you tell me how that's an outstanding leader in emergency response. On top of that, federal-state cooperation? What? The states don't want anything to do with her, except for California and New York. The other states don't want clean using sites. They don't want clean crack pipe kits. It's ridiculous. Issues of health equity. I love that, you know, because they have to make sure that there's equal spread of wealth within healthcare, because there's so many racist pieces of the United States healthcare system. But because she's openly transgender, that's the only reason why she got the job that she has. It is absolutely sickening. And as we see the dominoes fall, we've got the sports trans. Now we have the beautiful actor, actress, sort of model, influencer trans. Here's the brainy trans, right? And we're going to continue to see people that represent each one of these groups in order to fully immerse or fully inject this trans narrative into young people that fall in each one of these groups. Because it's not enough to just have one. They have to have everything. Rachel Levine is just a sad excuse for a human. She refuses to acknowledge that DNA exists. She refuses to acknowledge that there are such things as biological sex. She refuses to define what a woman is. Yet she is, again, exalted because she decided to remove her penis. And to me, that's not fair. And that's why I get so frustrated. Rachel Levine, Pete Buttigieg, you know, all these people that are in their positions. Same with Lloyd Austin. He's only in his position because he's black. So, and Biden has said all this, by the way. This is not me being racist. This is me repeating Biden saying, my cabinet will be XYZ. My cabinet will have XYZ. Gays, trans, black people. It'll be the most diverse cabinet. And then several sources and several articles have been reported, even when they were looking at attorney general and defense, making sure that at least one of them was black or gay. So it's ridiculous that, again, and I talk about this in my show all the time, that we're putting skin color, sexual orientation, genitals, who you like to sleep with, before merit, hard work, and dedication, which, by the way, that is the reason why this administration is failing so bad. And I've done a whole episode on it. But it's not just because Joe Biden is massively out of his mind. I don't know if it's medical or just that's the way he is. But, you know, it's not just that. He's surrounded by people that he put in these high positions that have little to no experience, like Kamala Harris has no idea what she's doing. But because she's a black woman of color, he put her up for VP. Same with Pete Buttigieg. No experience, no idea what transportation is all about, has destroyed the supply chain, but hey, he's gay. When you elect or when you appoint people, not based on merit, but based on all those other factors, you're never going to get the quality or the brains that you want. And so you have this sort of cabinet, if you will, of people who have no idea what they're doing, but they want to pretend they know what they're doing. They continue to pretend to know what they're doing. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse. And that is what we see today. So this Rachel Levine story is just a perfect example of what's happening in Washington and why the Biden administration is so bad from the inside out. It's not like just a bad president. It's not like George W. Bush, who was a moron. However moronic he was surrounded by brilliant people. This is not the case. He's surrounded by people like Merrick Garland, Rachel Levine, Pete Buttigieg, and they were all selected for reasons other than their merit. They may have some qualifications. We know that was not the primary cause or the primary reason of them being appointed by the president. I want to talk to you guys a little bit about the polls. very, very excited to see that the polls are showing the right basically sweeping, probably taking control of the Senate, definitely taking control of the House, and major wins with gubernatorial elections. Now, I'm not going to read you the polls. I'm not going to tell you who I think's going to win. One person who I think wasn't going to win, who's Dr. Oz, he has a way better shot than I thought. Same with Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker is crushing it right now. J.D. Vance is killing it out of Ohio. Kari Lake is going to win in Arizona. So we're seeing things surge strongly. And I get emails all the time from people and friends of mine that text me and email me and they say, Chad, how are you guys surging so fast, so hard, when nothing has really happened to make that effect? And I realize that most people don't understand polls and what's going on. So I want to just give you guys my rough breakdown of polls. Polls, since the beginning of time, first of all, they weren't invented for politics. Polls were invented essentially like focus groups for companies to understand the consumer interaction with their product. However, of course, it's made its way to politics. Polls in politics have only been around to manipulate voters. That's it. Since the beginning of time, they've only been around to manipulate voters. Americans like to be on the winning side. So oftentimes they'll vote for whoever's winning in the polls. So what happened was, when Hillary and Trump ran against each other in 2016, every single poll, Newsmax, Fox News, CNN, all the major media polls said Hillary would win. Some of them by double digits said Hillary would win. What happened? Well, we know what happened. Trump crushed her and flipped several Obama counties and Obama states to red for Trump. When we think about when that happened, all of those polls were discredited. Everything in the mainstream media was discredited as far as predicting Hillary's win. And they all had egg on their face. And so many people told me, oh, the poll companies are done. Polls are done. We're not going to have any more polls. They're completely shot, discredited. That's not true, because there has to be some gauge. And polls are one of those things, almost like during a football game, when the points go up and down, people get really, really into the direction of the polls, the game. The polls couldn't go away. But what they did was, is they changed what they do. So now what happens, and you can see this so clearly in this midterm, the polls come out truthfully. And we had close to double digit leads all across the board when the polls first came out, all through August, all through July, all through September. End of September comes along, what happens? Oh, the DNC makes some big moves, and all of a sudden, we're in dead heat across the board. Some polls even have Republicans losing. How do we go from 8, 9, 10 point leads to now either losing by 1 point or in a dead heat? What they're doing is they're trying to reinvigorate the Democrat voters. So they don't think, well, Republicans are going to sweep anyways. We're not even going to go vote. So they're trying to invigorate them and say, look, we have a chance. We have a chance. We have a chance. However, if they keep that lie poll, if you will, that manipulated poll going all the way through, and it's the opposite of what actually happens, once again, they completely lose credibility and they have egg on their face. So what do? I call it the CYA poll. So you've got realistic numbers, then you've got manipulated numbers, and then right before, now we're 2 weeks before, you're seeing these conservative surges. Does that mean anything new has happened? Not really. Have any of the Democratic competitors, rivals, done anything that's really been had to shift the climate of the electorate, other than Fetterman in Pennsylvania doing his debate? No, not really. There hasn't been any major shifts, major scandals. But all of a sudden, we're surging in the polls. That is the real number. So when the midterms close and Republicans win across the board, the poll companies can say, hey, we told you. We told you. And that's the problem with polling, is that it's just a manipulation tool to get people involved and for them to try to impact voters based on where the numbers are. It's kind of like, again, watching a football team. You've got a football team. Fourth quarter, they're up 2 touchdowns and you've got 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Chances are you're packing up and going home. There's very, very little chance that you're going to win if someone's two touchdowns ahead of you with 5 minutes left in the game. That's what's happening here. They don't want that to happen, because what will ultimately happen is that the voters on the Democrat side will just give up. No one wants to vote for the losing side, and nobody wants to support a winning side that they don't agree with. So not only do I think we're going to have lower Democratic turnout than when we did when Biden ran and when Hillary ran, I also think the results are going to match the polls that we saw in August and September and right before the elections. And you can see it surging now because people are doing their mail-in ballots already. So it's really interesting to watch. But the beauty of it is that we're winning everywhere. And it's going to be very interesting. Now, the Senate is in a dead heat. Oz and Walker will be very important to the Senate. The House is already a done deal. And I think we're going to see some big governor shakeups as well. I mean, if you look at a state like Oregon or New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders states, they have Republican candidates that are actually within the margin of error to win. You would have no idea, none, that this could happen. These are blue, deeper than blue states. And people are so fed up in Oregon and New Hampshire with the left and the woke and the mob, they're actually considering electing Republicans. I mean, think about that. Can you imagine if Oregon has a Republican governor? Oregon, the land of Portlandia, the summer of love and Molotov cocktails and destroying federal buildings. It's hysterical. And it's so funny that these liberals in these states who feel like they've had it in the bag forever are actually having to step up and work for once. And they don't know how to do it. They're not good at it. They're not scrappy enough, and they can't engage the public enough. And so actually, someone like Katie Hobbs, for example, in Arizona going against Carrie Lake, I think she was very smart not to debate after seeing Fetterman, especially. It's almost like putting OJ on the stand. There's a reason why you don't put your serial killer client on the stand, because 9 times out of 10, they're going to screw up. They're going to say something, or they're going to come across a certain way that's not going to sit well with the jury, because they already have an uphill battle. So Katie Hobbs's team knows that if she goes out on stage, she's done. And she's already losing by double digits. But she knows if she goes out on stage, she's done. And so she's avoided it, which is actually a lot smarter than what they did with Fetterman and kind of tried to put him up on the stage. And he couldn't even, you know, make one coherent sentence. Actually kind of sad. But I think we're going to see a lot of really, really strong winds. Like I said, I don't believe in the red tide or the red wave. I think all of our wins, they're going to be a little too close for comfort. We're going to end up winning anyways. It'll be interesting, folks, to see. Make sure you go out and vote and make sure you understand what these polls are and you take it for what it's worth. You know, they're just manipulation tools for every party involved. All right, let's switch gears to the military. One of the reasons why I love talking about the military these days is because we have the worst Secretary of Defense of all time, who is Lloyd Austin. Lloyd Austin is a crook, first of all. He has several multi-million dollar board seats for private defense companies all over the country, Raytheon being one of them. Lloyd Austin has spent more time getting the DOD woke-ized, telling them words that they can't use, words that they can use, recruitment efforts for trans people, recruitment efforts for the LGBTQ community. And we're sitting ducks militarily. We're not ready to fight China. We're not ready to fight Russia. We're completely underprepared for any sort of mass, I wouldn't say nuclear war, but, you know, weapons of mass destruction, if you will. And so every year, the Heritage Foundation comes up with what they call the military index. What they do is they weigh our current military against reports that the DOD has come out with throughout the years and recent years to what would be required in order to sustain or win a certain military conflict. And so when you look at this index, it shows every branch of the military, Army, Marines, Air Force, and Navy, and what they have on hand, what's coming, how many people that they have, and they do an index to see, according to, in comparison to, what has already been shown as benchmarks from the DoD, how vulnerable we are. Well, go figure, this year we scored a weak rating, a very weak rating, because we don't have what it takes to combat. So if you figure it like this, the Marine Corps has stated that it needs 27 infantry battalions to fully satisfy the validated requirement of the regional combatant commanders. Yet it currently only fields 22 and has stated that it plans to drop to 21 in order to make resources available for experimentation and modernization. Wonder what that is. Experimentation and modernization. In 2012, the Army was building towards 48 brigade combat teams, but incremental budget cuts reduced that number over time to 31, less than two-thirds the number that the Army originally thought was necessary for military conflict. The Navy has produced various assessments of fleet size since the end of the Cold War, from 313 ships to 372 ships, with some working estimates as high as 500 man ships. Older equipment can be updated with new components to keep it relevant, and commanders can employ fewer units more expertly for longer periods of time in an operational theater to accomplish an objective. At some point, however, sheer numbers of updated modern equipment and fully trained, fully manned units are going to be needed to win in a battle against a credible opponent when the crisis is profound enough to threaten a vital national interest. That is scary stuff, people. Very, very, very scary stuff. Very scary stuff. And so on Fox the other day, Mike Pompeo was on, which I love Mike. And he basically breaks down the fact that Obama was the first one to significantly start slashing military budgets. Trump rebuilt it, got them everything that they needed in that short amount of time. While, by the way, he restocked all of our oil reserves. And now Biden's back on the Obama plan of cut the military. Obviously, we saw it in Afghanistan. We're seeing it in Ukraine. He's giving money to everyone else. But all of our resources, military resources, are under terrible budget constraints. So when we see things like the CCP, Xi Jinping, making it very clear that they're going to reunify with Taiwan, the reason why our administration just moves on and kind of shrugs their shoulders is because they know we don't have the infrastructure to fight them. I wonder if the NATO countries really understand how bad the strength of our military is for 2023, even moving forward. Again, we got a weak score. And that doesn't mean our military is weak. We're still the number one in the world. The goal of the report is basically how well our military can defend and secure national interests, and it's weak. And the weak also prioritizes a bunch of different aspects. So you think about weak overall. We could have a very strong army and tons of troops ready to go on the army, which might be strong score. But I can tell you right now, in cyber defense and cyber warfare, we're nowhere near where we need to be, which will take down the entire average. So the average of the score has multiple factors considered when we talk about protecting a national interest. Mike Pompeo goes on and says, look, there's so much more we can be doing. So we have a long-term strong military. And he says, in the Reagan years, when our military strength was powerful enough to face down and deter the Soviet Union, we spent more than 5% of our GDP each year on defense. Under Biden and Obama, we spent 3%, which is not efficient for us to be ready to fight. If we don't go back to that 5% spending level, there's no way we can deter the CCP. And there's no way we can head on face Vladimir Putin. And that doesn't mean raising taxes. We have to take the money in and prioritize it in a way that is most effective for us in this country. And let me tell you, that's not climate change. That is not climate change. Cut some of that crap. There's so much pork. And if you go to my episode called Where's the Pork? If we just took out all of those things that I discussed, or any of the additional pork that's in the pork report, say that 10 times fast. If we take any of that information and we cut those out of the budget and add that to the military budget, there you go. It's about redistributing funds to what matters, which is safety, security, schools. But of course not, because we need wind tunnels and wind mines and all this other green stuff. Electric cars, the electric fleet of emergency vehicles. Oh, wait, the power got knocked out by a hurricane. How are the electric vehicles going to work? Oh, some will be charged. That's my favorite. Oh, there'll be some trucks that are charged. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. We're also severely behind the times on our weapons development. We have terrible supply chain, which you think that affects you or me and my couches getting delivered after ordering them 6 months ago. Think about how that is affecting weapons being delivered to the military. Pompeo says each branch of service is plagued with procurement disasters, often wrought by political forces and profit motives that care little for actually building and deploying decisive weapons. This process must be more directly involved with the armed services themselves that will use the weapons and sidestep the bloated Pentagon bureaucracy. That's true. Guess who else is obsessed with profit motives that care little for building or deploying decisive weapons? Lloyd Austin. What does he do? He runs the DOD. He makes money off of these contracts. So he's selecting providers that kick him back, not necessarily the ones that have the best technology or the ones that are going to be able to deliver in the fastest amount of time. Oh, no. Ones that will pay him. It's such a conflict of interest. And we have so many issues within our military right now that instead of taking it head on, we are just taking this as the status quo. And one of the biggest challenges that we have with our military is that we cannot sustain the recruitment numbers that we've expected. People don't want to join. Why don't people want to join? People don't want to join because it's being made to be a bad thing. The left has painted joining the military as something quasi-criminal almost. The other factor is they can't recruit and they're losing soldiers out of the back end because they're continually being discharged for refusing to comply with Biden's mandatory vaccine policy. 14,000 soldiers over the next 2 years will be discharged, even though Biden said the pandemic is over a month ago. The service careers of thousands of people have been threatened, and many, many more will be derailed. And people say, well, why is it taking so long? Why don't they just fire them all at once? Well, because they need them. And the military leadership actually are trying to hold on to these people as long as they can to see if they can hold out Biden and his mandates before they start letting go all their troops. Lastly, we have to remember all the crazy things that are happening in the military as well, which are contributing towards the score of weak. The woke policies are crazy. I mean, we just learned that Air Force cadets are being taught to avoid committing microaggressions by replacing terms such as you guys, terrorists, and mom and dad with terms that have been deemed less offensive. Bright, brave young men and women sign up to fight and defend their country and instead find themselves lectured about race and gender identity and pronouns, Pompeo says. It is such BS. We have prioritized wokeness over readiness, and it's hurting our national security. And actually, Pompeo has a campaign that he's running to stop the spread of readiness killing wokeness in our military. Those are his words. The key here, guys, is that Reagan said it best when he said peace through strength. We don't need to arm up and increase military spending to 5% of GDP because we want to go to war. Actually, building our military has a great positive impact on our economy, especially when we're buying weapons, machinery, everything that we need from other United States private companies, get manufacturing going. So not only does increasing spending help our economy militarily, but it also allows us to deter war and not go to war. Because if we're not ready, it empowers people like Xi Jinping and Putin to attack because they understand our readiness. They read all of this. But if we are stocked up with the most technology and the best soldiers and the best infrastructure as a massive fighting machine. Guess what? There will be no wars. There will be no issue with Taiwan. That is why China continues to outbuild us in the military. So they know before they pull that plug that they can actually compete with us and not just talk about it. And so while they're spending more and building their military, we're spending less and teaching people not to say mom and dad. I mean, it's just, where do we live? You know, we're at risk for catastrophic war and conflict, yet we're putting budget restraints on our military, which again, is not a fighting machine. It's a peace machine. Having a massive military equals more peace. And it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true that we need more of the military power that we're used to. Until we stop this push from Lloyd Austin and Biden to wokeize the military and change the culture of the military from a national security first agenda to a not offending anyone agenda, we're sitting ducks. And it's scary. Because these leaders are not afraid of Biden because they all have serious stuff on him. They've all got major compromising evidence on him, not Trump, contrary to what the media will tell you. It's so ass backwards. You know, it reminds me of in business when you hire someone for a job, but they're actually better at something else, but you keep them back. Because that's what you hired them for. You know, it's the reverse in the military. These people are hired to do a job and then they don't get to do their job. They don't get to train and develop skills in order to contribute to national security and be patriotic fighters for our country, for democracy. No, they end up basically having to go to psychology classes and learning how to not offend people. And it not only does it deteriorate morale, but it puts people in a position that's like, I don't want to be, this is not what I signed up for. This is not where I want to be. What's the problem? And over and over and over again, do we see more and more people leaving the military, more and more people complaining about the wokeness, more and more people are 100% worried about the strength of our military. And most importantly, is more and more they focus on the wokeism and on the BS agenda and culture they're trying to create within the DOD, the less important the actual national security becomes. And what happens? Things start to deteriorate even more and more. Allow me to leave you with this. As we approach an election, it's important that we represent our movement at the best of our ability. And the reason why I say that is because all of us are going to be faced with some very, very serious and violent, threatening behavior around us. It's inevitable. When we win, the woke children who believe that they're entitled to win and they're entitled to everything will begin melting down, really melting down. And we're going to see more hate being spewed from Biden and his camp of idiots. We're going to see a ton of issues coming out of Pelosi and the left representatives in the House. Senate is going to go nuts. And this is only a precursor to 2024 when Biden runs again or whomever runs again. We have to stay calm and collected. We have to be ready to use facts over feelings. We have to understand that these people have been told and they've been molded to believe that we are evil, racist, violent, political party of a bunch of neo-Nazis. Because they've been indoctrinated in that belief, of course, I'm not surprised by the way that they react. I'm always surprised by the way we react. We cannot engage. We cannot stoop to their level. I saw the Antifa Proud Boys fight the other day on the news. Two groups that represent people who think they're part of a movement. Proud Boys think they're part of the conservative movement, and really they're the opposite. And Antifa, who thinks they're part of the liberal movement, they're the opposite. Neither of them are defending the country. But both of them send a message to the rest of the world that these are the people that are supported by each side. And that is not the case at all. These are extremist, quasi-domestic terrorist organizations that are put forward to cause chaos on both sides. We, as a conservative movement, we on the right must display class and composure, and most importantly, empathy. When you take the sort of, when you take the emotions out of politics and you're able to look from a total objective lens of right and wrong and what's going to have the best impact on the country, it becomes very easy. If we do that, we will always win. I've talked about it with Roe v. Wade. Don't buy in to the crazy. Don't buy into the hype. Don't get worked up. Just get smart. Listen to this show, but be a true representative of the movement. And our movement is calling for law and order. Our movement is calling for a crackdown on crime. Our movement is calling for respect and common sense and liberties and freedoms. Don't yell. Don't engage. Don't go there. It's not worth it. If we come out setting a high example, a better standard, we will attract more voters and even strengthen our position going into 2024. I believe this election coming in 2 weeks is actually going to come down to more of what happens after the results than what the actual results are. The results that come in are the results. That's it. Okay? That is whatever they say is what's going to happen. Whether it's fake or not, whatever you believe, that's what the reality is going to be. Knowing that, all eyes will be on us after the results, whether it goes one way or the other. The media is looking for any excuse to paint us and pin us as neo-Nazi, destructive, violent, nasty, hateful people. And so if we lose, we can't destroy. And if we win, we can't destroy. We need to do everything with the most humility and with the most class in order to convert even more Democrats to our side. Because if we don't, if we buy into the emotions that the left wants us to buy into, that the media wants to create, the spin, the swirl, if we buy into it, the entire focus of this election will be off of policy and on to emotional outbursts, violent issues, protests, etc. And the entire point of the election will be gone. The entire point of us winning will be gone because the media will want to focus on the reactions versus the policies that we know are coming and talking to the candidates that won about what their immediate changes or immediate impacts they're planning on doing, because they'll be too focused on the crazy. Let the left flip out. Let them do their thing. Let them smash windows. Let them do their thing. That's what they're good at. No matter what happens, we need to stand proud. And we need to know that when we come from a place of strength, a united place of strength, where we all support each other and none of us stooped down to the level of the liberals, we will recruit and we will have millions of people join our movement. But the second we cause chaos, the second we see nasty signs out there, the second we see people like the Proud Boys that the media wants to present as representatives of the right, is the second we lose the attention as well as the interest of middle to left Democrats that aren't coming over based on personalities, not on policy. And if we focus on the positive, and we focus on the policy, and we focus on the candidate without buying into this emotional crap that we're going to be teased with, you'll see 2024 will be even better. I'm Chad Law, reminding you of what Reagan once said. Government is like a baby, an alimentary canal with a big appetite at one end and no responsibility at the other. God bless you, President Reagan, and may God save America.
You just listened to the Last Gay Conservative podcast, hosted by Chad Law. Please visit us at lastgayconservative.com for this episode and others. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you listen. If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and share. Find us on social at Last Gay Conservative. We proudly support the following causes: the Convention of States Action, the National Rifle Association, the Heritage Foundation, and Big Brothers Big Sisters of America. Disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent. The Last Gay Conservative is a production of Bend Right Media. All rights reserved 2022.